But the decision that was taken as the Public Accounts Committee is all bad. So this time around, the department would not necessarily come here because of their guilt, but rather because maybe it's been quite some time since we were not in the exit. So the those that are doing well, they can share with us the secret. One, why they are doing well, so that they could also advise other departments that they don't need 5 years of training to get around. They may be much more shorter time if they were to let go of the skills of others. Like I indicated, and as our program shows, there are a few questions that the members would want to interact with you on. We are not particularly horrified by the report. I must indicate that the auditor did put in some very kind words for you. Almost said, well, maybe you should call off the hearing. If the department has good leadership, if it is a competent financial staff, sound record keeping and documentation supporting transaction, and with a staff that is generally keen, capable, and cooperative, is possible, but it should be. And this has been a long time throughout all our critics. I'm saying therefore that we are having this here from that perspective, but however, there are a few issues that should be wanted. And I think you'll be the first to say that the things are not happening at the department. And of course, our approach should not look that way. That end goal and work on that basis. So I will hand over to Professor Samuel to start the process.
The report indicates
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for this opportunity. We take it as positive, and I think, as you indicate, we would be the first one to recognize that there's still a lot of room for improvement. We have actually drafted a management improvement plan, which addresses all the concerns raised by the Auditor General, which we've circulated here, and we would also appreciate coming back in the future, 3 or 6 months' time, to give us progress made in addressing the issues in the improvement plan and, of course, the issues that we will be raising in response to the process. On the issue of the understatement of commitment, it is largely due to two service level agreements that were signed by the Acting Deputy Director General in charge of the Office of the Government Chief Information Office, and they relate to the Cabinet project. One was for approximately $8.5 million and the other for approximately $10.5 million. Our audit committee did recommend that we take disciplinary action against the official because she didn't have the delegation to sign the service level agreement. Unfortunately, she has left the department before we were able to institute the disciplinary action. Thank you, Chairperson. It is correct, it was correctly reported that there are these registered candidates, but we have since put these registered candidates. And as indicated by the question, the main issues in the department do relate to the hired photocopy machines and cell phones. We previously never reported cell phones under this item, but this year we did include it on the recommendation of the auditors. And it's also been recommended that a manual entry register for leases are in place, and we've also done that as well. So cell phones form part of the local asset register, the phone becomes the property of the department, so that's the way we can address these matters.
My first question is that the witnesses identified by the AG on the information system are very clear in the report. What would you like to know, whether is there anything that has been done to avoid the verification of these certificates?
Why is it a
okay, thank you very much. This audit was performed in March 2007 on the information system, and the main issue that came up was the fact that we didn't have documented procedures for user account management on logic staff and personnel. We did have forms and operating processes, but these have now been documented as operating procedures. The issue around the system controller on Logos having access to incompatible functions is something which the department does acknowledge, although it is standard practice on all transversal systems that the controller has access to all functions. There was also a particular case mentioned of two user IDs, one for capturing on the part on behalf of other components, and one to capture a chief user class problem came about because the person was moved to registry and her ID was sort of automated system when audited, but we have since closed that relationship. Also then the active users on that used to be responsibility managers and have now been deleted. Unfortunately, the system controls were created by the BAT implementation team in 1994 when BAT was implemented and CPSA has no access to remove it. So we've logged a call at the user desk. The store has not been removed, but we'll keep following up on the issue and close it for us.
But I do see that in terms of the creation of new user accounts, many more prices. The age, not only talk about the lack of education of women, because that is not like it. That is now being documented or has also improved their upgrade or strengthening to reach proper level of access.
Yes, it works. I don't know if CFO would like to add.
The access to the information, every single finding that was found here in the order, not even only the one we sent to the main project, we look at all the internal clearing that we receive and we ensure that all of those are now transferred to the self-respect.
Just to indicate that part of the problem related to a particular item, which was the delivery of chairs, which was incorrectly captured on loaded. We didn't detect the typing error at the time, but the authorizing official has been made aware of the error and also to be more careful when approving actions on loaded. Then also part of the problem was that some of the items that form part of the IT infrastructure in the new building were not captured as assets, including switches and components of one of the servers that we have now corrected.
Yes, I think just want to check one point. Were you going to move to another issue or are you still going to have this question? Another issue. It is the issue around monitoring. Not too much the possibilities and processes. Like in our energy country, there is a challenge around leadership. Leadership is very important. People have the possibility to monitor and control. Not being too plain. Monitoring will be at the level that is required and at the level that will ensure that some of these lapses are not shown.
Now, Chairperson, I think we certainly acknowledge that as a problem, but we did take appropriate action in terms of upgrading the position of the person who's in charge of monitoring previously at level 7, and now we have appointed someone at a system director level to ensure that we get adequate quality of monitoring. around the assets.
Correct. Yes, I think I must comment on that one. But in our interaction with the level of the monitor, especially around asset management, it was a very low level. And I think the very large extent that contributes to the quality of the monitoring that takes place. So it has been upgraded to adequate level. I do hope, believe that it has created the objective possibility to get proper out monitoring. Okay.
The other part of the report is that the people in the system financial year, the project is not really this management and financial year. So shall we be informed what steps the institution is having so far with management? Secondly, there is no change at the beginning of the risk assessment. Any implementation of the fraud prevention plan looking at the but lastly, the report also indicates that the risk committee led only one during the year. What is being done about
it? Thank you very much, Chairperson. I do think this is a serious matter. And it does relate to part of the issue I raised during the previous discussion about the need for managers to take on the responsibilities of decentralized public management systems, which aim to empower them ultimately. Because it's true that all the problems that have been identified by the Honourable Member, as reflected in the Auditor General's report, exist and are serious problems. So given the inadequacy of the risk committee, what we've done is we've escalated risk management to the EXCO level in order that EXCO takes on the functions of the committee. And with the full EXCO, we have subsequently undertaken a risk assessment and put in place a task team to finalize the plan of action. What we need to do now is take the plan of action and put it into a proper strategy and implementation document. We might need to get some external assistance with this. At the same time, the question on the fraud prevention plan, it forms part of the strategy. But we realize that the fraud prevention plan is too generic and we need to customize it for the DPSA. We're still using the original fraud prevention plan, which we had PricewaterhouseCoopers do for us. So there is also a further step we're taking in order to coordinate all this, because we can say we put it into the management structures, and that is we will be recruiting a deputy director to help us coordinate the risk management strategy within the department. Thank you.
Is that the appropriate approach, or are you saying the risk committee by any way saying the management of risk I send you to the saying that the ECHO is taking over the function of the risk committee. Why aren't you seeking to constitute one? Or why aren't you seeking to get assistance in whatever in case of non-central action? Or if you want to do it for competition?
Chairperson, I think what tends to happen with some of these things is as the DG, you will issue an instruction about the need for the risk committee to meet and the need for branch managers to identify managers at the appropriate level.
then when we convene, we find, in terms of the senior management echelon, it's always those at the bottom level. We do not believe that directors are adequately placed to really do a thorough risk assessment, yet they can make a contribution. So in order to force my hand, as it were, I decided to escalate the matter to ExCo level, where we have all the DDGs sitting. But in order to make the system work, we then need to give some support to that process. So as we sit down and engage in a risk assessment process within the department, we need to ensure proper coordination, documentation, follow-up, etc. So I think the other mechanisms I spoke to in terms of having an ongoing coordinator at the deputy director level and someone to document the process adequately is what we're seeking. But I think the important point I'm trying to argue is that I found it necessary to escalate the matter to top management, because that's where we can have the most thorough assessment of risk. I think there's, I am saying that, but I'm also saying even if we had a risk committee full of directors and we met the compliance requirements, the quality required of a thorough risk assessment, and I think that really informs the decision. Because we can have a risk committee which meets regularly, signed off by the Auditor General, but are they in a position at that level of management to adequately identify the strategic risks faced by the department as a whole? My belief is that it is a top management function. And therefore, if I was unable to get top managers into a risk committee, the best way to do it was to ensure that at ExCo, periodically, we do have dedicated risk sessions.
I might just quote from the Public Finance Management Act, Section 38. That the accounting officer for a department must ensure that the department has and maintains effective position, transparent business, financial and risk management and internal control. So from this section of the PFMA, very clearly, the accounting officer office responsibility to ensure that there is proper risk management for the departments. I think one of the issues that you alluded to earlier relating to risk is relevant to management monitoring program and control. I think equally applies to some of this area of risk management. We often find that within the department and public entity as well, that the responsibility management is pushed down to a level where the various divisions tend to do the evaluation at their specific level. And therefore, the risk assessments that emerge from that tend to focus and concentrate just within that specific division. What gets lost, I believe what might be well counted by having extra taking, this call is not necessarily ownership as such, but certainly largely the accounting officer, but at least the monitoring and reading of that risk assessment, is that your cross-organizational business, which is between those divisions, are looked at that higher level. So I do believe, seeing that, I think it's a useful approach to have. I don't believe that the EXO would be responsible for doing the work. This would be purely a monitoring role, and I think it is responsible. Together with the interim audit, with the interim audit doing monitoring and their findings being worked and applied within the risk assessment process, and then also the audit committee taking responsibility for the review and decision making regarding certain actions which are required relative to the risk assessment results that have come to the fore. I therefore don't see it as an appropriate to say on that monitoring and meeting or something. But possibly it's why. That's from the audit perspective.
Just a forward plug. Exco taking the monitor for all the people in the place. I think I wouldn't say Exco is replacing, but I think Exco has to be directly involved in the actual assessment process itself, and that's what we're currently finalizing in terms of the strategy development. In other words, to develop the assessment itself, which we believe needs to be updated on a regular basis, Exco has to become directly involved. Well, I think under the process which we envisaging, ESCO will be responsible for updating and monitoring the strategy. The DG will also be supported by the internal auditor and the internal audit component in terms of monitoring the implementation of the strategy. And the audit committee will be reported to as required. So the kind of risk committee we had in the past has become superfluous in the same process.
Now you talk about external assessment when you're responding initially to your question. What kind of external assessment? Where does it fit in? Or external assessment to what?
Well, I think since we still are in the process of recruiting an appropriate an official at an appropriate level, we will need a stopgap measure to ensure that we thoroughly document the processes to facilitate proper monitoring. And that's where we need to bring someone in, also to support the internal auditor who has been sort of running with the coordination of the process, because obviously the internal auditor would be overstretched under the circumstances with all the other responsibilities. So we do need the additional capacity, which we intend establishing on the permanent establishment, but in the interim we would need the assistance with the documentation.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chair?
Yes. Chair, most of the major issues have been addressed, and you have given us the document, which obviously we haven't had time to study. So if I ask a question that's been already been responded to in your document, you just forgive me for that, because we have time. I would like to just ask a few questions that relate specifically to financial matters. Now, the first one might be a little mischief, but I find it rather strange that in a department that such as yours, your main objective is to help to create a sense of efficient and happy country, and hopefully you have million whatever people not seeing such a strike because they'll be very happy with all their conditions of employment, etc. And then to find out that the very people responsible for trying to create that environment tell us that their financials were submitted late because of the strike. Now, I'm just wondering why you should blame the strike for your financial statements being submitted late.
Chen, will I respond to that? Wait. Do you want to respond, Honorable Chen? I thought it was your way of introducing yourself. You are now quite the actual question. Well, it's broken. Just go ahead. A few questions.
Okay, that's fine. Right, let's get on to your internal audit, the audit committee. During the year, the 6 months of the year, you did not have a internal audit committee. And perhaps you can just inform us whether that matter has been corrected and whether the lack of having that committee had any impact on some of the matters raised by the Auditor General in terms of the system.
Thank you very much. Well, we have corrected the matter, and certainly it was a serious problem during the financial year under review. But we have corrected it, so we do have a fully functioning audit committee. And I would hope that the reason why we have all these structures and processes is to avoid the kind of problems, some of which have emerged during the course of the audit. So it probably would, to some degree, explain some of these problems that were identified in the notes by the Auditor General.
You have a fully functioning audit committee, and are they meeting in a prescribed number of meetings? As required by Treasury Regulation 8.2.3. This was also reported in the previous financial year. What have you done in order to correct that problem, and where are you at this point in time in terms of that requirement?
I would like to say that for me personally, I find this a very, very serious matter. And this is because the future of SMME development in our country, to some extent, does depend on the ability of departments to implement the 30-day payment. So it is a very, very serious matter in my view. I think we did make some progress, but not good enough. Part of the problem is the verification of banking details, which proved to be challenging, but we have instated new rules about this, so that when orders are placed, we build in a process to capture the banking details, and this is now running smoothly. We also need to ensure that suppliers issue the invoices or submit the invoices to the right door within our department, because there's a tendency for suppliers to deal with line managers and then they issue them with invoices, and line managers, again coming back to the issue that I keep raising about managers embracing the decentralized delegations, simply put them to one side. They need to go directly to our supply chain management section. So one of the things, obviously, we need to raise awareness amongst the line managers that should invoices be lodged directly with them. They need immediately to put it into the right process, which is the supply chain management office. I think we are improving. And we seem that under the current trend about 3 to 5 on average invoices per month being processed late. But we do now attach an explanation for audit purposes. But I think this is an area that I have emphasized in response to your question that we just need to get right 100% of the time.
Of course, I think he did mention that this is for the second year running that the ROVG office is in progress. I do not get the same kind of confidence to respond to your question. So it remains a gray area.
Well, I wouldn't quite say it's a gray area, Chairperson. We do believe that there was an improvement, although it still was mentioned for the second year. And it could well be mentioned, you know, for the year we're in, but we believe that it will be much lower. It's one of those areas where one is challenged to reach 100% compliance, but we're aiming for it. We're certainly aiming for it through the measures that we've indicated.
What is the fundamental of this seemingly stubborn problem? So far, it seems to have sorted out everything that is in front of
you. I can't comment on that, Shane.
I hope you are not coming in on his behalf.
No, I'm not.
Because you are on the other side. So.
It's more widely.
Okay.
It's a much wider problem than just one problem. The first issue. That most departments, including the PSA, have is the date stamping of the invoice on receipt. Now, this is where it goes to line manager as well as indicators, and is not brought to the functional responsible process as added. Therefore, the date stamping or date of receipt on the invoice. The trade regulation is very clear. It's from date of receipt, not date of invoice, date of receipt. So it's required that all invoices be stamped on the receipt. And the 30 days then kicks in from that. The problem is the Treasury regulation does not make any deviation for the situation that the Department of Finance has. They now receive an invoice. That invoice now becomes under dispute. Something wrong with the calculation, or the value that's attached to that, which is contrary to the agreed contractual arrangement. hours issues sometimes etc. Now they've got to enter into a process of negotiation with that supplier of the service. Often sometimes getting a replacement or to agree to find solid ground on negotiating what is the correct amount to pay in terms of what's being delivered. Now, where that arrives often takes more than 30 days to resolve this issue. And if my memory serves me correctly, in the assault calls that we did for DPSA specifically, I think 80% of the cases that we identified resulted or were as a result of invoices that were under invoice. The other 20% of the credit was under the 20% of the process. But it is a challenge. Probably the reason why this was reported specifically to DPSA, and it doesn't really come to the fore that much in a lot of other departments, is it is a small department. It's a very small department. These cases tend to be far more identified than in the large ones. It's also more centralized as well. But it's still a problem. I do believe that maybe once you look at the Treasury regulation, my colleague from the Treasury has to possibly allow some deviation from that requirement, really on specific problems related to it. There is no such flexibility permitted at all in the Treasury regulation as well. So I don't
failed to meet compliance requirements of the fish regulation. You pay on the incorrect invoice, and then you correct it for later payment. So I don't view that as a personal thing. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair.
Would you say that the justice for you? I'm just trying to think and probably be ignorant of the commissioner. A receipt comes in today. Are we talking 30 working days or 30 calendar days?
It just says 30 days, but if one goes to the interpretation of statute legislation, there technically, if one applies that rule, it should be working days.
Which one did you use?
I think generally across auditing at the moment they use 30 days of calendar days.
So it's about 30 working days. I'm trying to understand the process. I know PSC spoke about the element of red tape in terms of, minimum process. An invoice gets into your office. How many steps does it usually have to go through? I'm just trying to say, unless the 30 days was arrived scientifically or it was just 30 days a month is enough. I'm just trying to check what are the actual processes that would require more than 30 days for one payment to make. I'm looking not so much at the level of experience, but more at what it means in terms of the
I didn't. I think we started at the fire.
but we should also consider that in this advanced time component, in other courses, we work also on a 3-day. When you get it back in its time, it might be a backlog, depending on what time of month it is. So we say usually, it's like not longer than 3 days. We get it captured as out of supply chain to finance. We finance the transaction. We work on it 3 days. Your problem comes in that when it comes to finance, for instance, and the banking legal does not exist on the system, we have not previously made use of the supplier. Stops the whole process, then you have to go to SafeConnect, capture the information, back 4 days for National Treasury to verify. Then you can start this process again on this side. That's why we have implemented, as soon as we place the order, we already go to SafeConnect to save us that 4 days of the day to meet. So, but really, to get to the 6 days, people don't realize it. It is really a push to actually get it to the same time of the day.
Okay. Yes, sure. That sounds like a very effective risk management system you've got in place. Of course, it has unintended consequences. Is this one more question on pure financial matters? You know, the Auditor General has in the past, and has done so with you, allowed you to resubmit your financials and then correct them. Now, obviously, we don't like this happening too often. But we want to get to a point where first time you bring your financials to get audited and an opinion will be given. But the Auditor General has done again for you for this year, has allowed you to resubmit or to make changes. And he mentions, for example, the fact that expenses to the value of 9.39 million were incorrectly classified between venues and facilities, travel and subsistence and consultants. Now, there are other matters as well. The 19.4 million that the department did not identify in respect of commitments to staff. Now, the first question would be, why is it that you can't get your financials correct the first time round when it's not a really big budget? Just a budget itself, it gets a few small departments. I agree with you there. And then, coupled to that question, the Auditor General also informed us, and this is not in your audit report as far as I know, in your annual report, somehow he's unable to identify, or you don't account for the CSIS account separately from the department altogether, and it's difficult to unbundle some of the expenditure in that regard, which means that we don't have a true reflection of what the CSIS is actually, you know, costing, etc. So clearly there's some problems there with your accounting procedures, and maybe you could just tell us what you've done to correct that particular problem.
All right, except for the last question, I think the issue from the speaker will be handled differently by corporate compliance.
The accounting side of it, should, yeah.
Let's give you the first part.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think apart from the TC, to which, as you've indicated, this will be dealt with separately, I actually believe we were dealing with two specific problematic cases as opposed to a generic problem within the department. The first of which I have spoken to already, which was the understatement of commitment relating to cabinet. And there, basically, the problem was that finance did not know about the SLA that was signed by someone who was not authorized to sign it. So I think in that sense, we were dealing with somewhat of a unique case. As again, with the very large function, the global function, in fact, which we organized, which was Global Forum 5 on fighting corruption, where invoices were paid to the service provider and then basically captured under venues and facilities. And then we split the expenditure between venues, transport, and consultancy fees according to the detail on the invoices. And then following, when the books were closed already, we got a more detailed reconciliation from the service provider that altered the split that we had captured. The books weren't closed, but the auditors did insist that we do the amendment. So we do believe it was a unique case. And I think in future, obviously, we've learned lessons from it, and we would need to ensure that we do very careful allocations in the future. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, then I think I have two other issues. The first is to do with the revenue or underspend, I think 14 point whatever million to Treasury, which was the result of underspend of your budget. And then coupled to that, the figures that we received from the AG, and it was mentioned this morning, I think, by our chair, that your vacancy rate was pretty much the same. I don't want to get involved in a whole debate about vacancy, but what would be the reason for the under-expenditure? And then perhaps, coupled to that, the vacancy rate, that's part of it. Then if you look at your disclosure to your note and your annotated at the back, you will see that there are pages and pages and pages of explanations regarding the consultants appointed in the department. I'll just give you the figure at the end of this particular annexure. You sent and you have budgeted for it, so you employed something like 400 odd people to do this work, some for one day, others for a few days, and a host of different issues, pages and pages of it, and at the cost of, I think, about 124 million, which is a huge part of the budget. Now, my question A is, first of all, about the vacancy, was that partially the reason for your under-expenditure? What was the reason? Secondly, why have you made such use of such broad use of consultants in your department? And you don't fill your own post.
thanks, Chairperson. Just in terms of some of the areas of under expenditure, there were particular projects. Maybe I'll just mention since the question was put as to where the under expenditure was. The one relates to the cabinet system, which we referred to in another context. Another also relates to expenditure around Global Forum 5, where we didn't expend the full amount. There is also an aspect related to property management because the Department of Public Works did not invoice us. There was another project which was deferred, and that was on the impact assessment of the National Anti-Corruption Strategy. And then there was elements relating to the Minister's program, which is the international work which is undertaken by the Minister. The Cabinet Global Forum 5, the impact assessment on the anti-corruption strategy and the minister's program, all those amounts were actually rolled over. I think on the vacancies, obviously it's a big concern because I think all of us need to practice what we preach, and we do have very in-depth analyses of the kind that was presented to you this morning, which we ourselves have put together. Even more elaboration, far more elaboration actually, on some of the challenges. But I think one of the problems that maybe was not specifically referred to is, in our case, we did go through a major organizational redesign process. And I think one of the problems with those is that the minister then approves, we submit requests to Treasury, and we don't get the full amount. Now, then how do we deal with it? It needs to be much more systematic than it has been. And I think that is one of the things that has created problems for us. Nevertheless, what I think it is important to say that we have now identified the vacancies on the department's establishment, which correctly, I think you've mentioned the figure of 21 or 22%. But what we've done now is we've decided to prioritize the filling of 54 vacancies. And we're placing a focused attention on filling these vacancies before the end of this financial year and monitoring very closely so that if, for example, their jobs that haven't been evaluated, we've set up a specific process to ensure that they are evaluated or have been evaluated during September of this month. We've also obviously been very systematic about the advertising of posts and really trying to monitor, because again, even if we take a decision at the DG level, one then needs to monitor right down to the line function. HR in itself cannot ensure that all these things happen unless the line function is proactively also doing what is required of them. Because I think one of the key aims, as I keep emphasizing, of decentralized public management is to empower managers to do the things that they need to do. Now, we can't talk about decentralized public management if we just have corporate entities like human resource management and financial management that only take responsibility for financial and HR management. Line managers need to manage not only their lines, but the corporate side of the operation, which is HR and financial management. So I think we certainly have taken some specific steps to address the issue, and we do acknowledge that we certainly need to do better internally within DPSA around the kind of HR framework that we have established for the public service as a whole.
Okay. Just a very short question on the consultant. I've got to say now, so you employed, according to the table, 494 individuals during the period, and they worked a total number of days of 4,992 days, and there were 433 different functions that they performed for. Cost of $125 million. Now, can you give us the assurance that with all of this complex, all these people and the complexity of all these different projects, that you are able to assess that each of these people had an agreement, a service agreement, to do what they had to do, and that you were able to check to see that you got value for money and they actually did perform the task? Did you have the capacity to do that, and can you assure us that it was done?
Well, let me first say that I think one of the aims when we redesigned our organizational structure and went for an expansion was particularly to address this concern. And I think, you know, it's not a secret that the previous Director General and myself have adopted a different strategy towards how the department needs to work, with, I think, my predecessor placing much more emphasis on outsourcing and so forth, with me rather placing emphasis on the need for us to build the necessary capacity to do the things that we need to do. I think if we look at overall, there has been a decline in the use of consultants in the department, if we look at the two financial years under question. I think the issues you've raised, though, are issues which are relevant for our department and the public service as a whole. And those pertain to the capacity for thorough contract management to have key to the problem. Because I think as we hire people, we often turn them into contract managers. So we think we're hiring people to do work, but we end up hiring people who then manage contracts of outsourced providers. Perhaps I'm going to ask the CFO to respond to some of the questions about the systems we have in place to ensure thorough monitoring of the contracts and so on. Thank you.
For the field, I said
1,500. Sorry. Now, what's the change of that? Yeah. Chair, I don't have time to really ask a lot of questions about the information, performance information, and the targets, because I just looked through them, and at most departments, I find that many of your targets are sort of gray. You don't quite know how to measure them. You know, we did a little exercise at a conference that we had, or a workshop where we were asked to go through a department's annual report to find out how many of the targets were measurable, and, you know, you just find it difficult. And then I noticed that you also haven't met many of your targets. So I'm not going to go into that, but we're only just starting now to look at performance information. The Auditor General is now starting to do a little bit of auditing of that information. Reliable or not, but I just want to ask one question which I find rather strange. This morning we had a long debate on systems and personal and all of, you know, this stuff, and you told us that you were well advanced in the process of getting a new financial management system, integrated financial management system. Is that correct? Okay, well, now then I'll go to program 4, which your information and technology management program. You have only two outputs here for that program, and not one of them refers to a establishment or working into an integrated financial management system. And
just wondering why, if it's a major issue, if it's so trivial, why is it not in your program as one of its outputs? Or is it done only after the end of the financial year? And I also noticed that that program budget has been doubled. If you look at previous years to this year, you've got almost the budget for that program.
Right.
Is that to ensure the effective use of information and IT in government and to facilitate the use of IT for modernizing government and establishing e-government practices. So in other words, that's what your intention is.
All right. Let's get pointed responses so that we can move to the other item.
Okay, we'll do this jointly with the CFO. But I think the increase in the budget on the IT management is more because of cabinet. The actual budgeting for the IFMS is the budget itself with the National Treasury actually, and the HR module is held within our HR line function branches, the branches which deal with human resource management and management of compensation in the public service as a whole. They are the ones, and the DDG responsible, Mr. Kenny Govender, has already spoken to that. I certainly would not argue with some of the general problems you found, both across the public service and with ours as well, just in terms of the flow between your strat plan, your estimate of national expenditure, and your annual report, as well as the quality of the output indicators which are defined in various parts of or in different elements. Of course, the estimates of national expenditure themselves need to also be compared against departments operational plans, which are far more detailed, and I think the quality of the ENE as a reflection of an operational plan is a major issue, and I would also accept that in the case of our IT management ENE, as compared to the operational plan, I don't think that we have optimally captured everything that goes on, so that by the time you perform your oversight function, it's not 100% clear what it is actually that is going on in this particular component. Those are systemic defects as well across the system as a whole. So I accept the concerns. I think you also had a question about, you know, whether there was really a decline, but I think. You know, it's not a decline in the quantum of the money. It's a decline in consultants as a percentage of goods and services. I think that's the analysis which we've done to show a decline in the use of consultants.
And
I think
I
should also consider that our budget grew with about 250 million. So the 2 years that you are comparing to each other, our budget grew with 50 million also on goods and services, and that's why we made the comparison as a percentage of goods and services. And although our established reserve, some of this work cannot be done even if we appoint people. We include things, for instance, like the Gateway Call Center.
What was your budget? Did your budget from the previous year to this year double?
year, the total budget for the department, the appropriation for 05-06 was 187 million. Appropriation for 2006-2007, 442-426. So it was more than double.
All right. Can we...
There's just the one question that wasn't answered. I just wondered why your BE, you know, is one of your outputs. Why is it was not included in program 4 that was to assist in developing integrated systems, which is what you were talking about. The governor was telling us all about the which is a major project in your department. I understand.
Honorable friend,
yeah.
he responded to that question. That was the first issue he responded to, but he responded in.
Official
language. That's why you lost out in hearing what he was saying. And it was actually acknowledging that you're correct and your concerns are correct. It is part of the general problems you find in the public sector where some of the things do not always tally in terms of information. So in a very soft way.
No, I understand that, but you know, just given what the long discussion we had this morning, you know, with the commission's administration and yourself, to me this becomes an absolute priority. And I mean, clearly you can't drive it alone. You've got to have, you have treasury with you and so on. But I think it's something really should be focused when you do over the next year or two.
Yeah, I would again say that he responded to. In the manner that acknowledged that indeed you're correct. That information was supposed to be there, but apparently the money is with the treasury and there's something between them and treasury in terms of driving the process to get to where.
Maybe just for the honorable members' information, the integrated financial management project has been running for a couple of years now. It is owned by the International Treasury. It's been developed and coordinated by CETA, the State Information Technology Agency. There's a central committee that consists of the CISOs of all the national departments that are driving what's going into that. I think the important factor is that my understanding of it, the last stage I got was introduction 2012. 2012. So this is still some way away in terms of introduction at this point. So there's certain aspects, or let's call it modules, of the system which have basically been almost completed. But it's still going to take some time before this is going to really remedy the issues within departments as such. And it's correct, the finance for driving this project that lies one with CETA spending the money. Financing funding within National Treasury. Also, just for the information of members, National Treasury brought this booklet out in May, which is basically the framework for managing program performance information within departments. So we can see some of the adoption of some of these principles and that within the new reporting cycle for 07 and 08, Honourable Member Trent, which I think then apply what they refer to as a SMART principle. Performance as well. So it's a step in the right
direction. Thank you, Chair. All right. Okay, Chairperson. I've got to be quick because I've got to go to another meeting. In fact, my question is on the public sector Education and Training Authority. My question is around the concern of the Auditor General about the going concern status of the organization. And I understand that they are short-term arrangements, but what I wanted to know is, what are your medium-term to long-term arrangements? This serves be misfunctioning one way or the other. Given that levies are not paid by departments and state institutions, that is my first question.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll just give a bit of background and overview, and then I'm going to ask one of my colleagues.
No. Let's maybe go straight to the meat. The issue is, we understand you have a three-year arrangement. Now, his concern is beyond those 3 years. What is the way forward beyond the current arrangement?
Okay.
That will address the going concern of the entity.
It is untenable because it has a board that reports to the minister and the CEO, which reports to the board, and it sits in a department where an accounting officer does not have a clear role. That was the brief background that I wanted to give. But we have actually created the basis for listing it as a public entity. And we were moving ahead on that basis, but the CEO resigned, the finance manager passed away, and we did not believe that it would be responsible for us to release it, as it were. I have seconded the chief negotiator, who is with us here today, to act as the CEO, to help us in the recruitment process of a new CEO and finance manager, while ensuring that all the necessary systems of control are in place. So, Mr. Kragan Chisa is here, and maybe he would like to make a few comments about the medium term. Thank you.
No. I think your answer suffices. You want to have it listed. So it will be a standalone just like all other cities. That's fine. That's sufficient.
Thanks, Chairperson. And then the second area was around the performance information of that sector, where the auditor general said that they were not always, your information was not always supported by evidence, and then that objectives, the strategic plan were not specific enough, and they were not specific to a certain period as projects.
Given the corporate governance problems, I'm actually going to ask Kenny to deal with that, if that's okay.
No, Chair, I think we need to acknowledge there is a disjuncture between the performance, what's the key performance areas and what was reported again. But there's a slight difficulty with the CETAs as well. They have a separate service level agreement that is signed with Department of Labor, and they report against that in terms of performance. And because it was treated as a component within DPSA, we also had part of the performance agreement and part of the operational plan, a separate plan within DPSA. And I think that's created some of the disjunction in the way we approach it. The second key area that one needs to take into account is the PCTA, as a CETA, cannot deliver on any of those functions because the current funding arrangement does not allow for any of its operational issues. For example, learnerships, all of those things. They are funded through, in a large extent, through the National Skills Fund. And during the course of last year, we received no monies from the National Skills Fund. And therefore, a number of those projects had to fall off the table during the course of the year. But that's an area that needs to be addressed through the public entity process.
I think the second question is something that is being done for the moment would suffice there. And then, luckily, there has been an investigation on alleged fraud. What is it in just now?
The matter is with the courts at the moment, but we can give additional information. The case is going on at the moment, right now. But I don't know if we want to give additional information.
Further details. The moment we picked up the fraud, the entire system was closed down at that stage. And we backed up all of that information. We brought in the special investigative unit. We appointed the NPA as well as Housing Police Services to take the process forward. As the DG has indicated, currently this matter is before the courts. The individual himself is in prison at the moment, together with three accomplices are in prison at the moment. And the process is ongoing. We hope to get a conclusion to this case very soon. Which will be completed by the end of November as part of the investigation. We need to also indicate a large percentage of that money was recovered. The accounts were frozen because we immediately picked it up, and using the NPA, we were able to freeze all of those accounts and recover funds to a large extent.
Thanks for the prompt. Thank you, Chairperson.
Right. Just before we close the committee.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be short. Just one thing is, this is a comment. I think normally the departments, when they bring out a report, it is in the beginning there's a forward or a message from the minister, and which in this one there's nothing referring to the minister or the message. The other thing that I wondered about, you have a very odd item on 96. Under 27.2, disposals of tangible capital assets. There's one thing, machinery and equipment. There's no money attached to it, but it's specialized military assets. And I was just wondering with the DPSA why there would be such an item. If it was Department of Defense or police or whoever. Maybe there's some character. There's no money involved, but I'm just wondering if anything is actually in the department. And then my last question, Chair, which I would, maybe if you don't have the information now, if it could be supplied. Page 20, you refer to the extensive research mandating and marketing since 1999, the government employers medical scheme GEMS was established. And then you say in page 41, an amount of $35 million was injected into this. One would just like to get some information if it could be supplied maybe at a later time. One, who exactly are the stakeholders in this, and what is the management fee that are being charged, and how does this thing work at a later time?
Okay, I think the point about the forward is noted. We'll have to look into that in the next report. The specialized military assets, we were supposed to, that's an error because we're supposed to remove the items that we don't report against. So that's clearly an error. And GEMS, we could certainly submit you with further information. It is a medical scheme registered in terms of the Medical Schemes Act. It has to be fully compliant with the requirements of the registrar. We could, I think if you would maybe just detail all the information you require, we could certainly furnish you with the report on GEMS. No problem.
All right. Thank you very much. We have come to the end of our today's session. Once again, thank you very much to the department, National Treasury, as well as the Auditor General's Office and to two members. We certainly are informed and happy that subsequent to the AG's report, there are a number of measures that have been taken to address the deficiency. Although, we still need to deal with that challenge of payment. It did appear that the 30 days were going to be quite a tight schedule to meet, but I have absolute confidence in the probably did a scientific measure of these things and realized that it is most appropriate. The most appropriate time frame within which to operate. So I think it is an issue that does need to be attended to. The question of concerns DG certainly want the capacity being built within the department. The money that will be quoted for what is termed the small department, just astronomical for me. And the reduction in the number of consultants without reducing the amount they use that is not a cause for rejoicing. I do think that it is an area that definitely does need. We need capacity in the system of state administration. We always frown upon the excessive number of consultants in this community. So we certainly want to emphasize that point. That for those services that you would not have capacity in the department, even if you had full-time employment, fine. But when I look at this element around staff support, it's like the whole page jumping over to the other page. I think these are matters that we want to say they do need to be addressed and to be attended to. And this question that we're dealing with in the morning around the vacancies, I see in the report that you've given us, you are using the figure 24%, and somehow departments would want us to believe that it's about 8%. I don't think that we're about to believe this here, because all the briefings that we get from the AG, we're yet to come across a department that is less than 15%, better less than 20% vacancy rate. And all the departments that have come here have not included the figures that we've got from the AG. So it might as well be that when they made the inquiry, somebody decided to spin on figures just to look good or whatever. But it is a concern, it is an issue that certainly does need to be attended to. But thanks very, very much for your attendance.
Oh yes.
I said you should pack it. No, I'm saying you should pack it and I forgot. Yes, can you ask your question?
No.
Or do you know the question? You want to respond to that question, to that known question. So you stayed in order to ask this question. Oh, all right. About your 21% vacancy rate. I think he touched on it when the DG pointed on the prioritization of, was it 58 posts that they would want to be filled as a matter of absolute agent. So I think if I heard you well, yeah, I think he did touch on it at some point during the process. Yes.
Will I be correct if I say on this coming budget that we shall be approving next year, we are going to cut all the budget for employment because it gets wrong? Can that be an understanding? And then we shall do so. I'm from the young movement and I know these problems that we have. We have got so much unemployment here and we give money to people to be employed and they are not employed. So can I go ahead with that suggestion?
Unfortunately, you must first pass the act in parliament that will allow us to change money bills. Then we can do that. But right now, our hands are tied. I'm just saying, but no, I hear you.
Yes. Some of these, I will employ 300 workers. Therefore, budget for it. And for unknown reasons, we were not aware that that was not a true reflection. Now we have realized that it's not a true reflection. So we wanted to come up with the facts. I know one cannot accept the facts and deny the relevance, but we are going to do that because that is the level that we have realized. But there are no protections to that, and then they can't come up with the facts. Thank you.
All right. No, it's fine. We'll leave them with that threat. So thanks very much. Until members, until we meet next week. Until we meet on Friday. The agent's report. Thank you very much.
Another question.
Thank you. I don't know.